Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 5th, 2016. A former South Sudanese minister is urging IGAD heads of state meeting in Ethiopia to take tougher action against the Kiir administration.
What we need them to do is the following. They should declare that all those actions that took place since the 8th of July were a clear violation of the peace agreement, and therefore they should be reversed.
And South Sudanese Olympic team say it's ready to compete in Rio de Janeiro.
I'm very proud because this is our first time to join the Olympics. This is our first time in South Sudan because South Sudan is still a new young nation. We are now waiting for the day for our competition.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The IGAD heads of state are meeting in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa to decide whether or not to send a third-party intervention force into South Sudan. South Sudan's former Minister of Agriculture is in Addis Ababa and says he would like the IGAD heads of state to quickly send an intervention force into the country in order to save lives. Lama Kol says the regional bloc should listen to South Sudanese leaders who have fled the country following fighting that broke out in Juba in July.
Well, I was sharing with them our concerns as a citizen of South Sudan in relation to the abrogation of the peace agreement by President Salva Kiir. And we wanted them to take note of that. The events that took place since the 8th of July have practically killed the peace agreement.
What would you like the IGAD heads of states to do in order to resurrect the agreement, since you said it has died?
What we need them to do is the following. One, they should declare that all those actions that took place since the 8th of July were a clear violation of the peace agreement, and therefore they should be reversed. Secondly, the third force should be authorized to enter into South Sudan, especially in Juba and the big capitals of some states, so that they provide security for the citizens of South Sudan. Third, that force, once it has established the peace and stability in South Sudan, then there would be a freedom so that the political forces can get engaged in a new political dispensation that will carry South Sudan forward.
If you are given an opportunity to choose, let's say, from the number of countries that should send their forces to South Sudan, which countries would you recommend?
Well, I think it's already decided that the countries of IGAD plus Rwanda are the countries to do that because they already have forces there in South Sudan as part of UNMISS and part of the African force that was sent there after the signing of the peace agreement.
And what is your take on some of the issues that analysts are raising in the region? For instance, they are saying Uganda is a partisan. They have been taking part in this conflict. And they are saying Kenya and Ethiopia have business interests in South Sudan and they should not be part of this intervention force. What is your reaction to that?
Which country will have no interest in another country? This is the essence of international politics, that countries have relations because they have mutual interests. So I don't think such an argument will apply. Maybe in case of Uganda, because it has sent troops into South Sudan, that fought on one side of the South Sudanese parties that were fighting, that may be the only valid point. But otherwise, if you have commercial interests or you have economic interests or cultural interests, that does not disqualify any country from being qualified to send forces into South Sudan.
There is some xenophobic sentiments among some South Sudanese who have been saying that foreigners have taken up their jobs and now sending foreign troops there. Don't you think this will resurrect these xenophobic feelings and create a very healthy environment for these foreign troops.
This is not true. It is just something being made up by the current government that enjoys suppressing people. And if another force comes, it will ensure that the ground is level, the opportunities are equal for all. This is not true. There is no xenophobia. And secondly, that government will not even be able to resist that force. This is just bluffing.
That South Sudan's former Minister of Agriculture and Natural Resources in the transitional government of national unity. He was speaking to me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. SPLM-IO officials say East African leaders meeting in Ethiopia should endorse an intervention force for South Sudan to complement the UN peacekeeping force already in the country. President Salva Kiir says foreign troops are not invited into South Sudan. But Joel Yol, SPLM-IO representative to Ethiopia and the African Union, says last year's peace deal has collapsed following July's clashes between forces loyal to Riek Machar and government troops. Yol tells VOA's James Batty that last month's clashes prove President Kiir is not in control of his forces.
Our position as SPLM-IO is clear. We wanted a town to be pacified. You know, we realize that the government troops in Juba are doing despicable atrocities, raping women and killing people in town. The Third Force is a welcome, sir.
The president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, said he does not see the need for any foreign intervention to come to South Sudan.
When we signed an agreement last year, we thought that the Third Force is not necessary. And we thought the two forces would manage the security in Juba. But with what happened in July 8th, 9th, and 11th, it could show you that the government of South Sudan or the president himself is not in control of his forces. If you need the peace agreement to go ahead and be implemented, you would need a third force to stay between the two forces so that the civilians and the peace agreement itself can be implemented without any problems.
Let me ask you, is your leader, Riek Machar, is he going to be in Addis Ababa?
We hope that he would be here, but since he was pushed out of Juba, he's still around Juba. He's being attacked daily by government troops and helicopters, and we did not find a way for him to get out.
So you are saying he is in South Sudan?
Yes, he's in South Sudan, he's around Juba.
And you said that he's being attacked daily, but we've spoken with the government, and we were told that the government had never gone after Riek Machar.
You know, we have UN people in Juba, and every morning you see helicopters taking off and soldiers moving towards the directions where they suspected Dr. Riek Machar to be hiding. And guns I heard, there's a lot of fighting. This thing is not something somebody can deny. And I'm just wondering why the government is doing that. There were directives to hunt for Dr. Machar, and it's happening daily.
You said the SPLM-IO would like for the peace process to get back to where it was before the July fighting. Is it possible because, as you know, the first vice president, Riek Machar, has been replaced? So is it possible that you can ever get back to that?
You know, we know that the position of installing Taban Dengai to be the first vice president was illegal. If you could follow what happened in Juba, they were saying that Dr. Machar was absent and they're replacing him temporarily. But if that replacement temporarily, it would be Dr. Machar himself selecting a senior minister to replace him. But what actually happened in Juba is a replacement. And that replacement was illegal because the leadership of SPLM-IO did not sit down. We have 28 members of Politburo of SPLM-IO. Only four people sat down in Juba. And that's why this agreement became null and void. You know, they've actually abrogated the whole agreement, and the agreement was dead. For us to go back to Juba, we need the peace agreement to come back to where it was. We, as SPLM-IO, believe that the agreement itself is the only thing that will save South Sudanese. We want all these things that have been installed illegally to be returned back to where they were before July 8th.
That's Joel Yol, the SPLM-IO representative to Ethiopia and the African Union, speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier today. The military spokesman of the South Sudan Army, Brigadier General Lul Roy Kong, has dismissed a recent UN report accusing government forces of committing human rights violations, including rape, during and after the recent fighting in Juba. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
In the report released yesterday, The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Raad Al-Hussein, said the recent fighting in Juba resulted in widespread sexual violence, including gang rape by soldiers in uniform and men in plain clothes. The UN says it documented at least 217 cases of sexual violence in Juba between July 8th and 25th. The report says in a few areas, women from various ethnic groups were raped by heavily armed youth. Kong questions who the people in uniform were and wonders how the United Nations determined that soldiers who raped women and girls were SPLA. Kong says the UN should provide the SPLA headquarters with detailed information on the soldiers suspected of sexually abusing women and girls so that the military leadership can take measures to punish them.
They have not yet come forward with an official report requesting us to do investigations based on the evidence they have provided. We have not received any complaint from alleged victims regarding the above-mentioned issue. So how do we move forward in absence of all this? And we therefore say these are baseless accusations.
The ANMIS acting spokesperson Santel Pasad says ANMIS is confident that the report is correct because evidence was collected directly from victims. She says ANMIS is conducting an independent investigation and has so far documented at least 100 cases of rape.
These accounts were taken by victims and a report was compiled. And I think you've seen from some of the statements that we've issued, well, you'll see from the chief of the Human Rights Commission in Geneva, they've actually saying over 200 cases have been reported.
Kong says Despele is also investigating independently its soldiers accused of committing crimes during last month's fighting in Juba. He says Despele leadership has detained 19 soldiers scheduled to be court-martialed for alleged acts of looting, murder and sexual violence.
They made their first court appearance today, and these soldiers are charged of different crimes ranging from looting, loitering, random shooting and murder.
Kong says investigations are continuing and more soldiers could be apprehended in the coming weeks. He urges victims of sex violence to speak out. Kong says Despele leadership promises to protect any person who comes forward with information and to seal the identity of that person.
The identity of that person is going to be kept secret. Should need arise for that person to be given additional protection, the Despele General Headquarters would be glad to do that.
Kong says SPLA soldiers should be stick to the rules of engagement. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
While in Torit, police say a known gunman killed two people and abducted five others in an attack on commercial vehicles along the Juba-Torit road on Wednesday. Many commuters were stranded yesterday as public transportation was halted due to insecurity along the road. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Owners of commercial vehicles suspended operations along the Juba-Torit road for at least 24 hours on Wednesday following the early morning attack. Eyewitnesses say a group of gunmen attacked three commercial vehicles at Cor d'Ilep. A passenger who was abducted and later escaped says the gunmen ordered all the passengers out of the vehicles. The passenger who did not want not to be identified for fear of retribution from the attackers says the gunmen sought and killed two Sudanese passengers, then blindfolded the remaining passengers and forced the drivers to head into the bush. Torit Police Chief Inspector Colonel Cesar Oromo says the armed men looted everything in the three vehicles, including dozens of cows headed to Juba for sale, commandeered the stolen vehicles far into the bush.
There were almost three cars, two highs, one black and one white, and then plus one lorry. Lorry was taking cows. And then these people departure from here around 8 o'clock, going to Juba. So when they arriving to Kagwada Bridge, they got the ambush, which led almost two people dead.
Romo says the five passengers taken hostage later escaped after being forced to walk several kilometers toward Lafon County.
They managed to escape from this because there were about five of them. Three boys and then one elder and then plus the young girl. They have gone from the road for almost maybe 15 kilometers. They are approaching almost near to the mountain of Hola, managed to escape from there.
Many passengers have been stranded at the Turit bus station since commercial vehicles are not traveling on the Juba Turit road. Wane Bosco, who is driving from Juba to Turit today, says these days safe travel from one part of South Sudan to another is a challenge.
What I know is only God is helping people to move around this road. Anywhere in South Sudan, the issue of the security is everywhere.
Loboy Anthony, who traveled from Turit to Juba today, says he is aware of the insecurity along the Juba-Turit road, but has no other option.
We are praying to Lord just to reach us there. I don't know what can we do. I'm not sure that we can reach in that place. Maybe the problem will just catch us in the road. I don't know. That is it.
Ramos says police are trying to make the Juba-Turit road safe for all passengers, but right now cannot guarantee safety of passengers and businessmen and women.
The condition of the road is still not possible, but the government may make any connection between here, Turit to Kudo, at least to make a link, and then by then the road will be possible, because these gangs, they came from Lafon.
Romo did not specify what measures police are undertaking to ensure security along the Juba Turit road. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health workers warn HIV deaths are on the rise in the former Western Equatoria state. More on that after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most important life lesson you would want your children to learn?
That anything you are given, you shouldn't see it as little, because it's when you do your best for the little you have, that's when you get more opportunities.
Yeah, it is good to learn traditional dance and to keep on our children also to know how our traditional dance is.
I would like to teach them about integrity. That is doing the right thing even when nobody is watching. At the end of the day, you'll be rewarded.
I would like them to be very good citizens and very responsible, of course, with a career. Just naturally, everybody is born to be responsible, to be doing something. I think it wouldn't be wise for someone to live and is hopeless.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. At least four HIV patients have died at the Ezo Primary Health Care Center after antiretroviral drugs, also known as ARVs, ran out of supplies. More patients are at risk if ARV drugs are not sent to the center very soon. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Yambio.
The road between Yambio and Ezo County has been impassable for the last few months after armed groups closed the road. Joseph Peter has been taking his antiretroviral treatment since 2007 when he was living in northern Uganda, but has not received the life-saving drugs for the past 3 weeks. He says the lives of HIV patients in Ezo are at stake.
They are just crying and appealing to the government to come and at least to open the way how the drugs can reach us here at the Grand Road here.
Juliana Sichirani, a mother of two, has been taking antiretroviral drugs for over a year. She says she worries that she might die if the road linking Ezo to Yambio is not reopened soon.
We are always crying. Everybody is just nodding the head down. We don't know what to do in future now. We are just appealing to the government of South Sudan so that they talk, let them help us and open for us the road so that people who are helping us bring for us medicine, let them start bringing for us.
Thomas Yeske, a clinical officer at Ezo Primary Healthcare Unit, describes the situation as miserable. Yeske says four patients have died of infections in the last 3 weeks because they were not given their medicine. Yeske says health workers only provide counseling and septrin to the patients, which is insufficient to defend against opportunistic infections associated with HIV.
Mostly, if it continues like this for 1 or 2 more weeks, maybe most of the people will start dying and more cases will arise to them.
Weki Wayo is a director general in the state health ministry. He says his ministry is aware of the plight of HIV patients in Ezo.
This has not been our own making. It has been the issue of insecurity. But people of Ezo, they are the same like people here in Yambio. We felt your problems. We are not happy for all what has been happening to you, and we hope all what has happened should not happen again.
He says his ministry is working with NGOs who provide health care services to try to ensure that HIV patients in Ezo get the drugs they need within the next 24 hours.
By the end of today, there will be drugs in Ezo, which will actually cover the crisis of shortage of drugs in Ezo, both essential drugs and ARVs. So we have already dispatched them, and they are on the ground.
The Gudwe State Minister of Health is yet to verify the number of HIV-related deaths in Ezo County over the past few weeks. A UN World Health Organization official who did not want to be recorded or identified by name because he is not authorized to speak to the media says his agency dispatched ARVs and other essential drugs to Yambio in early July. He says Maridi, Iba, Yambio and Zara counties all received their supply of drugs, but confirms that drugs headed for Ezo and Tombra counties were delayed in Yambio due to insecurity along the roads. More than 2,000 people in Ezo County are HIV positive, according to local health officials. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Yambio.
Meanwhile, in Juba, a new civil society group is opposed to the UNMISS Status of Forces Agreement, which allows UN peacekeepers to operate in South Sudan. The group is also opposing the African Union proposal to deploy a regional intervention troops to South Sudan. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The group, which calls itself Rally for South Sudan, was formed shortly after the UN discussed the possibility of deploying more peacekeepers to South Sudan and expressed support for African Union-backed regional troops in South Sudan. Its 50-plus members are raising funds and mobilizing youth. Former journalist Madin Ngor, who heads the group, accuses the international community of interfering with the country's internal affairs.
The challenges we face are just too great for one ethnic group, two ethnic groups. It need all of us, and especially the youth, to say one thing, because the youth are usually the tools that are being used by politicians. But we are saying that a united youth group would be able to speak strongly in defense of the country. Now it is against the UN, it is against intervention.
Mading says his group hopes to address issues like rampant cattle raiding, intercommunal violence, and the revenge attacks across the country. Mading is also opposing the UN's Chapter 7, which empowers peacekeepers to use force to enforce peace and protect civilians in accordance to UN resolution. The original UNMISS mandate in 2011 supported South Sudan government efforts to consolidate peace in the country and help with nation building. But when violence broke out in December 2013, the focus of the UN mission in South Sudan shifted to protecting civilians, facilitating humanitarian assistance, monitoring and reporting on human rights, and preventing further intercommunal violence. Mading says Chapter 7 should be removed from the UN mission's mandate.
It is a sell-out agreement. It doesn't favor the Republic of South Sudan.
Mading says South Sudanese who fought for more than 21 years to get their independence will not fail to address their own internal issues. He says countries who support UNMISS and the AU's decision of sending more foreign troops in South Sudan have their own interest at heart.
Dr. John Garang once said that when you are in a room, in your house, and the light goes out, what do? You go and look for a candle. But when you are a foreigner, you don't know where the candle is. You'll just be destroying everything in the room, and you don't know where the candle is because you are not the owner of the house. We South Sudanese, we know where the candle is.
A few members of the group had this to say about the political status of South Sudan.
Actually, we need to unite as the youth of this country to work together for the better future of this country.
My message is that we need to unite and go back to our people, telling them that this is our country. It should not be left to politicians alone, but we are responsible as youth, at least to go down and tell everyone that this is our country. Whatever we are doing is wrong.
South Sudan is great than any other person. Generation or regime come and go, but South Sudan will always remain. So it is very important that we get united and leave, you know, a better South Sudan for our future children.
The group says it will soon roll out a media campaign to be followed by a nationwide rally against the enemy's Chapter 7 mandate and the proposed AU-backed forces coming to Juba. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
History will be made tonight when South Sudan's flag is raised at the opening ceremony at the Olympics Games in Rio de Janeiro. South Sudan's flag will be carried by marathon runner Gor Mading Maker, who made headlines at the 2012 Games in London when he ran without the country. Mading joins two other South Sudanese as they represent their country in the competition for gold medals. Ayan Bior has more from Washington.
The coach for South Sudan's three athletes, Joseph Ramadan, says he has been preparing Olympic runners Gor Mading Maker, Margaret Rumont, and Santino Kenyi for months. Ramadan says he is bursting with pride for South Sudan's athletes.
I'm very proud because this is our first time to join the Olympics. This is our first time in South Sudan because South Sudan is still a new young nation, and we are very proud of that. We are now waiting for the day for our competition.
Getting to the Olympics has been an uphill battle. In an earlier interview with VOA last year, Mading said the South Sudanese runners who trained with him in Kenya struggle to buy proper training equipment, like shoes and uniforms. He says they also struggle to get proper meals to maintain their strength and energy while they ran over 10 miles on training days. Despite the challenges, 16-year-old Santino Kenyi, a 1,500-meter runner, says he is determined to leave a legacy at the Olympics.
I think the old generation, the new generation who is coming behind us, I think they will follow us because today is our big day and today is our day where our first Olympian are going to participate in Olympics, and it is also our first time to participate in Olympics also.
Kenyi says he has been planning for this day since he saw fellow South Sudanese Gor Mading run at the Olympics in London in 2012. He says Mading's determination inspired him to train for this year's summer games.
We are also very glad that for the first time we raised the flag of South Sudan, and at the same time we had also the first Olympian in South Sudan. So we are very happy, really, and we knew our new generation will do something in the future of South Sudan.
Coach Ramadan says the main advice that he gives his athletes is to remember that they are just like any other athlete on the field. He says there should be no doubt that his athletes will deliver.
We are ready to compete. Why not? Because we are still a new nation. We are ready to compete. Everybody here, the South Sudanese are there in the country, are waiting for us. When we came from there, we promised them we are going to make a new record in South Sudan.
Margaret Rumont Rumar Hassan will run the 200-meter race on the 15th. Santino Kenyi competes the following day in the 1,500-meter race, and Gor Mading Maker will run the marathon on the 21st. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Celebrate by Ruth Matiang.
Ameshazaliwa shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, ameshazaliwa. Wala la la, 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 wala la la. I woke up one morning and realized that I was new. A Savior was born in my sins. He washed away. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God. A Savior is here. Let's celebrate Him today. Ay 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 ay. Shangilie Nibwana.
We've been listening to Ruth Matiang with the song Celebrate. I'm John Tanza in Washington. You have a safe and peaceful weekend. Join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.